Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 26, 2015. A special envoy booth says it is time to South Sudan's warring parties to stop bickering and reach to a peace deal.
It is time to get to a peace agreement and to start putting South Sudan back together. Let its people go back to their homes. Let them resettle. Get this country moving forward again.
And clashes over cattle result in the deaths of five people in central Equatorial State.
They identified one captain of prison who was working in Lanya to be inside the car, and therefore they said, oh, Mundari is now here, and they brought this person and started beating him.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Civil society delegates at the IGAD-sponsored peace talks in Addis Ababa say negotiators for South Sudan's two warring parties are putting forward unrealistic demands. Government and rebel delegates have been negotiating since Monday, but it appears neither side is willing to compromise on issues of security and finance. South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza spoke with several members of civil society and faith-based groups at the talks to get their take on whether there's been any significant movement so far and has this report.
Several groups from the diaspora in South Sudan are attending talks as independent observers. They hope to contribute their ideas on what the future government of South Sudan should look like. James Emmanuel Oriema represents civil society groups in exile. He says some delegates at the talks have no knowledge of the root causes of the violence which tore the country apart in December last year.
You find that there is an intellectual gap whereby you find sometimes people who have been brought within the committee, they don't have the know-how. They don't have any specialization in the subject matters. And that really retards the discussions to move the peace talk forward.
Bishop Enoch Tombe is the leader of the faith-based groups observing the process. He says changes in negotiators at the table have slowed the progress at the talks.
In this final session, what I've seen is that both parties, particularly the government and the opposition, they have brought their technical people. And of course, some of them are completely new in this process. So it looks like there was an assumption that when you just bring an expert, he will understand quickly and then they will just solve the problem.
President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar must endorse any final recommendations made by the negotiators at the talks. Contested issues such as security arrangement, wealth sharing and power sharing have yet to be worked out. Emmanuel says some delegates negotiating such delicate issues as reconciliation and justice are stuck because they don't have the green light from their leaders to make on-the-spot decisions about compromises.
The other observation also which has been there is that some members within the committee, they have not been really given mandate even to talk on some other subject. And this has really affected so much because they have to go back to consult and the consultation is becoming too much.
The on-again, off-again peace talks have been dragging on for more than a year. The two warring parties signed several documents on cessation of hostilities, but those agreements have been violated repeatedly by both sides. U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, has urged the two leaders to attend this final phase of talks so they can make decisions on the remaining issues. Machar is in Addis Ababa. President Kiir is yet to arrive. Both leaders are expected to join the delegates next week and finalize the negotiation process. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza, reporting from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
Still in Addis Ababa today, we bring you the second part of John Tanza's interview with Donald Booth. Ambassador Booth says the international community has worked hard facilitating the talks that have dragged on for more than a year.
No, I think the leaders of South Sudan are the ones that have let down the people of South Sudan. As you said, the international community and particularly the South Sudan's immediate neighbors, IGAD, but also the Troika and others have been very committed to trying to find a way to put an end to this conflict. The United States has, as you mentioned, been very generous and supportive of the people of South Sudan, over $1 billion of humanitarian assistance. We've also been funding the major portions of the monitoring and verification mission as well as supporting the IGAD mediation financially. I've been in Addis almost most of the past year, so I think the commitment's very strong. Secretary Kerry personally came out here in late April, early May, for discussions with IGAD and did his trip to Juba. And it was after that visit that the two leaders met together for the first time and agreed to form a transitional government as a way out of the crisis. So we have been there continually trying to help South Sudanese leaders achieve peace.
A lot of people have said that this is a man-made crisis, and people who started it ought to have been held accountable a long time ago to bring an end to this. What is your comment?
Well, it certainly is a man-made crisis, and we've said that many times. But the men who made the crisis are also critical to ending the crisis. And so their engagement and their leadership is going to be absolutely necessary to achieve peace. The issues of accountability and reconciliation were something that has eluded South Sudan in the past, eluded South Sudan in the CPA, and is something that I think what I hear from most South Sudanese that I speak with, particularly among the other stakeholders that are here, feel that this is a critical element of any peace agreement going forward, that there will truly be an accountability for any atrocities that have been committed, that there will be a genuine process of reconciliation to bring the communities back together. Both of these are needed to ensure that there is no repeat of what happened in the period of December 2013 until now.
I hate to sound like a prophet of doom, but in case March 5th comes and there is no deal signed, does that make United States frustrated or disappointed or annoyed?
Well, we would certainly be very disappointed if there is no agreement by March 5th. Again, this is something that the leaders committed to at the end of the AU summit here in January. We will certainly continue to work with IGAD, with the African Union, and with other international partners, all of whom have been sending the very same message that it is time to get to a peace agreement and to start putting South Sudan back together, let its people go back to their homes, let them resettle, get this country moving forward again. This unanimity of the international community, I think, is very important and should not be underestimated by those leaders who think they can continue somehow to let this conflict continue. For the people of South Sudan, I would just like to reiterate that the United States has stood with you for many, many years in your struggle for self-determination. We stand with you today to help you get through this this terrible crisis. We're working to try to bring peace back to your land. And for the leaders of South Sudan, again, I urge that they summon the political will and the moral courage to look beyond any self-interest and to make the compromises that are needed to achieve an enduring peace in South Sudan.
Ambassador Donald Booth is the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He spoke yesterday in Addis Ababa with John Tanza. The Special Envoy's Office provides funds for this program.
Officials say at least five people have been killed on the road linking Juba with the town of Yei in central Equatorial State in recent days. They suspect cattle keepers fighting for access to grazing land are responsible for the violence and say some of the victims appear to have been targeted because of their ethnicity. From Juba, Mugume David Wakarinji files this report.
Central Equatorial State Information Minister Suba Samuel Manasse says at least two of the attacks occurred about 60 kilometers outside Juba on the road leading to Yei. He says police have received reports that indicate some of the victims were singled out based on tribal affiliation.
They identified one captain for prison who was working in Lanya to be inside the car, and therefore they said, oh, Mundari is now here, and they brought this person and started beating him, and this person was trying to escape, and then they shot at this person. 2 hours immediately, also a minibus was stopped, and immediately they got into the car and started looking at the people and found some Dinka people, and in the process, one woman and two boys were also shot on the spot.
He says the deadly attacks began on Tuesday. Manasse says police suspect the attacks were carried out by cattle herders who have been clashing among themselves and with farmers over grazing rights.
You remember this area, there are a number of cattle camps that are in the bushes. where the Mundari cattle camps in the bushes, as well as the Dinga Boer cattle camps, particularly these cattle camps that have been relocated from Western Equatoria, and they are coming wandering throughout the way where they are going. So we heard of the reports of the clashes in the bushes where also some lives were lost.
He says police have been carrying out traffic stops on the road to try to root out suspects in the clashes and attacks. He says the road has now been cleared, but the fighting might not be over yet. Manasseh says clashes over grazing land are likely to end much more dramatically than they used to, because some cattle keepers now possess sophisticated weapons. While officials have tried to confiscate them, people find ways to rearm themselves, he says.
We can never, as a government, be in peace and secure our people, the citizens, who are day and night toiling to make the two ends meet. If there are these cattle camps marauding here and there, and more so in possession of guns.
The deadly attacks come just a week after elders from all tribes in South Sudan met to discuss the need to end violence and nurture unity and reconciliation in the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an NGO says drinking water is contaminated from the hand of oil in Unity State. That story when we come back.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think dreams have meaning?
Yeah, dreams have meanings in a way that, like me, yeah, when I actually dream at night, sometimes when I wake up in the morning, that thing happens.
I think dreams have a meaning through my interaction with other people, although I do not put a lot of belief in my dream as a person. But there are people with whom I interacted, and I realized that dream sometimes is fixed. It can be translated to a tangible event.
I don't really think dreams have a meaning, because I haven't had any dream that has meaning or that has actually come true or is meaningful. I don't know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Research conducted in Unity State has found that much of the drinking water there is contaminated with waste from oil production and petroleum byproducts. The data was released in Juba today by German NGO Signs of Hope. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA.
The study found that 500,000 people living in 4 counties in the north of Unity State have been exposed for years to contaminated water. Sign of Hope Vice Chairman Klaus Stiglitz says the researchers believe they have identified the culprit behind the water pollution.
We found out that there in fact is a direct link between the oil exploration and production activities in the northern parts of Unity State and the contamination of drinking water in this area.
Sign of Hope gathered data for the study between 2008 and 2013. It collaborated on the project with another German company, African Water Limited, which specializes in exploring for groundwater sources and monitoring drinking water resources. Stiglitz says the researchers took samples from mud pits created when companies drill for oil and from basins near processing plants which separate water produced as a byproduct of oil production from crude. Stiglitz says one issue that needs to be addressed in Unity State is the lack of effluent treatment systems. Another problem is that there is no system in place in the areas studied to remove oil waste from water in areas where people live. This includes waste in surface and runoff waters close to settlements. The absence of treatment and removal systems means that the well water that people drink is more likely to be polluted, Stiglitz says. Hella Roeskam is an official with the African Water Limited. She says the researchers found potentially dangerous heavy metals such as zinc, aluminium, manganese, barium, lead and iron in some water sources.
All number of heavy metals is always, if you're exceeding some limits, it is always a problem for your health. Yeah, it will cause blood diseases.
Stiglitz says people in the study area complain of stomach pain, diarrhea and other health problems. Was still members of a committee from South Sudan's national legislature who visited Unity State to study the impact of oil exploration and production on human health found that some women in the area have given birth to babies without limbs. Stiglitz says Sign of Hope suspects the contaminated water is to blame and he wants people to be aware of the dangers.
It is our goal to share this information with the affected population of South Sudan in order to create awareness of this issue.
Roeskam says it's not just the human health that is in danger from the polluted water. The environment is also at risk and that puts the livestock on which so many people in South Sudan depend for a living in danger. Some of the photos presented at the launch of the report show the carcass of a cow lying near a well in an area where oil is produced. The researchers say in the report that they suspect high levels of heavy metals in the water killed the animal. Other photos showed animals that had died near ponds containing water produced during crude extraction. South Sudan's economy is heavily dependent on oil. Unity State is the second largest producer of crude in the country after Upper Nile State. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A recent study by Juba-based think tank shows South Sudan allocates limited funds to its health sector, something that is negatively affecting the provision of health services in the country. The government's health sector 5 years development plan recommends at least 7% of the country's annual budget allocates to the health, but only little is actually spent on health care. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports.
South Sudan has some of the worst mortality rates in the world. There are more than 2,000 maternal deaths for every 100,000 live births. That's the highest in the world. In addition, more than 80 infants out of every 1,000 births die before their first birthday, and more than 100 children out of every 1,000 births die before their fifth birthday. A big reason for such high mortality rates is less than a quarter of the population has access to health, according to the UN Population Agency, UNFPA. South Sudan's 2011 to 2015 Health Sector Development Plan estimates that in order to provide quality health care to all South Sudanese, especially the most vulnerable women and children, the government must spend at least 5.1 billion South Sudanese pounds on the health sector over that five-year period. South Sudan's leaders and health officials often say they are committed to improving the health of the country's citizens, but in reality, the government spends very little on health. In its 2014-2015 budget, the national government allocated only 3.5% of its projected total expenditures of roughly 11 billion South Sudanese pounds on health. The SAD Institute estimates total government spending for healthcare from 2011 to 2014 has been 1.2 billion South Sudanese pounds. The institute says that's less than $14 per person. SAD Institute's policy analyst Zakaria Ding Akol says such limited funding on health cripples health services delivery.
With this kind of funding, you cannot develop the infrastructure that is needed. So you cannot build hospitals, you cannot build clinics or medical centers. You cannot provide medical and other necessary supplies that are needed with this kind of funding. This kind of funding only goes to pay the salaries of the staff that are employed. And without building the critical infrastructure, you cannot really provide the medical services that are needed.
Akol says The government fails to deliver critically needed health services because it has too many competing priorities.
There are so many competing priorities, and people have not taken time to really sequence those priorities. If you look at the institutions of the government that have been created, some have been created, but they have remained dormant, which begs the question why we are paying people that we cannot ask to produce.
The World Health Organization estimates that countries need to spend at least $61 per person on health in order to achieve Millennium Development Goals targets for health. The 4th, 5th, and 6th Millennium Development Goals aim to reduce child mortality, improve maternal health, and combat HIV/AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. In 2001, African heads of state pledged to allocate at least 15% of their annual budgets to improve the health sector in order to achieve those three targets by this year. Akol says South Sudan probably won't achieve that goal, but it can do a lot more to improve its health service delivery.
Obviously, the needs in South Sudan would be different than what might have informed the thinking or the talking on the continent. So we cannot have exact figures without first studying what or identifying what the needs are and what the cost that would be associated would be to them would be before we can commit the resources that are needed.
Education and agriculture are the other underfunded sectors in South Sudan, according to Akol. Nearly 40% of South Sudan's 2014-2015 budget is set aside for security. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Lucy. The BBC and the Washington Post say a man with a British accent who has appeared in several Islamic State beheading videos is Mohammed Emwazi from West London. In the video, he says, "I am back, Obama, and I am back because of your arrogant foreign policy towards Islamic State, because of your insistence in continuing your bombings in the Mosul Dam despite our serious warnings." And he says in the video, "You, Obama, have yet again, through your actions, killed yet another American citizen." The Washington Post newspaper said Emwazi was a Briton from a well-to-do family and graduated from college with a degree in computer programming. Witnesses in Somalia say one person was killed by at least five mortar rounds fired today at the presidential palace in Mogadishu. Security officials confirmed the attack but did not release any information on casualties. Police say they are investigating the matter. Militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack and said several shells landed inside the palace, a detail not yet confirmed by security forces. And finally, a Taliban suicide bomber rammed his vehicle packed with explosives into a Turkish embassy convoy in the Afghan capital today, killing at least two people. Afghan Deputy Minister Ayub Salanji says the target was a Turkish embassy vehicle, but the Taliban issued a statement saying its target was a convoy of U.S. troops. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Lecturers at the University of Juba have once again gone on a strike over unpaid allowances dating back to 2012. The workers' stoppage is hampering the efforts of many young South Sudanese to attain their degrees and provide for their families. Mugume David Zwakarin has the story from Juba.
On a blistering Tuesday afternoon, 21-year-old Adam Aida sits in the shade on the University of Juba's campus waiting to hear something, anything about whether her assistant professor's concerns have been addressed and if classes will soon resume for students like her. Aida says she has dreamt of becoming a doctor ever since she was a little girl. Now, instead of being immersed in fourth-year studies and completing her second year in the School of Medicine, she sits and wonders when classes will begin again.
Now we already spent 2 years for one year, academic year. So I think it may be take more than 10. We just start and now we stop. I'm really fearing. Feel like, I don't know. Anyway, so it's really not good for our future.
Aida is not alone. 27-year-old Gany Emmanuel Angelo, who is majoring in statistics, has attended the University of Juba since 2010. Angelo says he has seen many interruptions over various strikes by both students and lecturers. He says none of the strikes accomplish much.
I come from Gudela, I use £3 for coming to the school, and then I use also £3 for going back. Eh? And because I'm staying the whole day in the school, I use £4 for water and £8 for food. So daily, I'm using £20. And this £20 is what I've planned for a certain number of days. But because the day is extended and we don't know what is happening, which means it will get me on the way. Well, the money will get finished and I don't know how I will cope up with it.
Last week, University of Juba lecturers began a one-month strike. They say unless the school pays its arrears for about 15-month back pay, they will not go back to work. Dr. Alfred Kilo Natana is the Secretary General of the University of Juba Academic Staff Association. He says professors and assistant professors are not unsympathetic to students' concerns.
Whenever a teacher is faced with problems, of course he's demoralized. I don't think that he will be effective in the class.
Kilo Natana says assistant professors are standing their ground because they need their allowances to cover their transportation and research costs. They say it also compensates them for extra hours worked.
As you know, our salaries are very meager, cannot cope up with the market standards. We have no accommodation. We have even no bonus, no appreciation. So the staff felt that what they are doing is not being realized. You see, they are treated as if they are not contributing to the development of this country.
Lecturers' allowances can range from 1,500 to 3,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. Aida says these continuous strikes hurt the country.
As a newborn country, we have to increase the number and the speed of the graduate so that we will be able to reach the other countries.
But that won't be happening anytime soon at the University of Juba. Minister of Education has not given a timeline when the lecturers' back pay will be paid. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Fiso Talaga by CJ Oman. Fiso Talaga Uda Baba Fiso Talaga Uda Baba.
Ana indile kungisa kede wedila na fursa finyar kutani ismu junub uele duo fiza manzuruf fijana tani ismu junub uele duo fiza manhurub aputomu tumakawaja umatomu tumajalaba unyar kude azuraba Azu school, azu medresa, italayan, azu mustesfa, azu jamewo, azu kenisa, mofru irabau.
We have been listening to CJ Oman with the song Fiso Talaga. I am Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.